This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good news in shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Okay, and the white light come on that says on air. Now, this week, we have a trainee running the show because normal weeks we get either Pastor Dave or Karen, who really knows what they're doing, but Pastor
this week we got
Tom got remoted. Is that remoted? Is that a word?
Remoted?
If you say
that's
so.
If he's at a distance, he's remote.
He was demoted, unmoted. Now he's been remoted.
He's promoted again.
Because Pastor Dave is claiming that he's tired from driving from Tennessee back. All right, is that fair?
That sounds like the story I heard.
That's what we heard. Anyway, folks, this is the Team Martech Hour. And as usual, we have Vince Rizzino, CPA, not only a CPA, a forensic CPA. And on top of all that, Vince used to teach university level.
But not at Columbia.
But not at Columbia, at another school.
Another quality school.
Really?
Yes. University of New York.
Is that kind of a big school?
It's a huge school.
More than 300 people?
Without a doubt.
Like 30,000?
The university system has probably got 50,000
in
there.
I know how that works. Anyway, Team Martech started doing these radio shows back in '04. I say that because we don't remember exactly when, but we knew it was before Hurricanes Francis and Jean hit, and the concept was very simple. Joe Martech, financial advisor. I'm also called a securities principal, a stockbroker, lots of licenses. In fact, by the way, I found out I got 4 more continuing education courses to take, and I'm doing this to Alan Love, who is our guest attorney, because they sent them to me and said, you got to take them by October 31st. So I take it. And the rest of them I couldn't get online for.
Really?
Well, then November 2nd, they send me a memo and say, by the way, this is your load, but you got till the end of March to take them.
Oh.
And I thought, well, boy, I'm nervous. You know, when you go over the line, they're going to penalize you for taking. Well, anyway, now I found that. So now on March 30th, I'll get anxious again when I'm taking.
Because we know you're not going to do anything until March 29th.
Well, maybe 28th. Depends on what day of the week it is. But we've got a guys.
The state of Florida for us CPAs, if we miss the deadline, they make us take more courses.
Well,
that's the penalty.
That's not a bad deal. I mean, let's face it. That's probably
one of them. Time management.
Yeah.
Time management course, right?
How to organize your day.
So anyway, where I was going with this was back when we started doing the shows. The concept was simple. As a financial advisor, I have lots of clients here in Florida, but also in 13 other states, and clients would ask me questions that I don't know the answer to. So in my not too humble opinion, and I try to be humble on this show, but to those of you that know me, understand I've got some pretty strong opinions on certain things.
And it's a challenge.
I've had some pretty strong opinions on certain things. Pastor Tom, why are you grinning over there?
I'm grinning because I don't want to laugh out loud.
I want to laugh out loud.
Because I know.
Well, one of my very strong opinions is if you are a credible professional, you align yourself with other credible professionals. Now, the word credible also means experienced with integrity.
Yes.
Now, when I say that word credible, it encompasses with experience and credible and with integrity. Now, one of the problems that happens is you can have all the degrees in the world and just get out of college, but if you haven't practiced yet, it's pretty hard to be experienced.
That's a fair statement.
Wouldn't you say that's fair?
Well, you're green.
Would you agree
green.
With that one?
Yeah. I would agree, yes.
No, you're green.
And I think all three of us would sit here and say, as an attorney, as a CPA, as a financial advisor, the people that normally make the most mistakes, not on purpose, are the newest people in the business. Is that fair?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, it's logical. I would say so, because they just... They don't have book smarts. So, yeah,
true. They got book smart. They passed the test. Now, I know people that can pass tests but don't know how to come in out of the rain. I mean, I'm picking on them, but I hired a young man one time years ago, college educated, got his licenses, and I sent him out to see a client one day. And the next day I say, how was yesterday's client? Let's just say the name was Smith. How was Mr. and Mrs. Smith? He goes, Smith. And I said, yeah, he went to see him yesterday. He says, hang on, let me get the file. He couldn't remember one day. So I said to him, how did you ever graduate from college? He said, I'm a good test taker.
Yeah, there are people like that.
He was one of those who cram all night long and take the test, and his memory, he was still awake, and he could take the test and pass. I said, you know, you need to get out of this business. You need to go to work for a bank. Bell rings at 5 o'clock. You can walk out the door. In mine, you don't ever. You know, you're always on. You have to know what's going on. Anyway, so when you find other credible professionals, like Vince looks really old because he is, and he's only been...
But not as old as you, Joe.
This doesn't make me happy. So he's been a CPA for how many years now?
Last time I counted, about 38. Whew.
And Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, he's right at that 38-year mark. When we start adding up Mike Paulus, mortgage broker, is like 27 or 28 years. Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, 1980. I can't even add up how many years that is. I mean, that's forever.
And she's still 30 years old.
And she's only 30. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. Never dyes her hair. That's another miracle.
I don't know. That's a little too much information.
Greg Fasula, attorney. I met Greg, we're guessing, 20-some years ago. You know, one of the better people alive. I mean, Greg is... You know, even Pastor Tom has got to agree with this. Greg has gone out of his way to help a lot of people, and he doesn't charge a lot of people. His whole concept is if he does what's right, people are going to come back to him. And I think all of us are pretty much in big belief of the circle. So the name of the game was, let's help our clients. There's over 200 years of combined experience, and I'm not even counting Alan Love, guest attorney who was a retired prosecuting attorney, because if we add Alan's experience, and we're up over 250 years.
Mm. Yes.
Yes. I gotta wake him up every once in a while.
Sounds
that was
like,
pretty good.
Sounds like he's been awake about 250 years.
You know what happens is, that's the first time Alan has ever said a one-word statement.
You're right. It's a one-word answer.
Because most attorneys, when you ask them a question, they get paid by the minute or by the word, and he can give you paragraph and paragraph.
How many times have I said the word continue?
Okay, but usually you add a paragraph to that. Like, Joe, nobody's listening to you. Please continue. Or something like that. No, you don't say that, really. I'm picking on you because you're handy. But Alan is...
You're handy.
Alan has been a guest of our show. You said over a year now, right?
Wow, has it been that long?
A pretty regular guest, yeah. And we appreciate it because Alan brings another dimension as a messy Jew to start with. Oh, excuse me. I pronounced that wrong, didn't I?
Should I say anything now or just let you just dig yourself further in the hole?
Thank you. Way to go, Alan.
That's it. He keeps digging.
Messy.
You know, he's the kind of guy, he hits bottom, he keeps going.
Well, living under that bridge is not all bad, let me tell you. A messianic Jew.
Yes.
Which means... Alan is a card-carrying Jew who decided to become a Christian. Let's see, how many years ago was this now, Alan?
That was in
2009.
8 years.
8 years ago.
And he's a very active Christian. Is that fair to say?
I would say so, yes.
And doing good things, and he's helped. He's put quite a bit of, I know. I got it.
You know, you got to shut your phone down there, Joe. You know,
I'm trying to, but, you know, I don't know how to shut it off when people are calling.
You just
I've got a hammer.
Got a hammer. By the time you got the hammer out and hit it, it would be done. See?
It's done. Now, I'll turn
the hammer works pretty good, doesn't it?
And nobody else will call. Anyway, so the concept of the group very much is just here to help people answer questions. Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, hardest working realtor on earth. Vince Rosino, CPA. Greg Fasula, attorney. Dan Warren, independent insurance agent. And I can't toot Dan's horn too hard because Dan, in my not too humble opinion, again, is the premier independent insurance agent. And even though Dan handles all my insurance, I shop all my insurance every renewal to see if somebody can beat Dan and do a better price or better job. And so far, it's not been possible.
Nope. Dan is the best. He's the best at what he does.
Under his umbrella, maybe 100 companies. It's in order to do what he's done, it takes many, many years to accomplish that. Okay, class, this is important. Now, you're supposed to write this number down. 1-888-221-8990. 1-888-221-8990. You write that down. You're supposed to call us up with any questions that you might have. And now is a good time because we have Vince Rizzino, CPA, and we got all kinds of stuff going on with the tax code that may or may not happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep changing it every week, it seems.
Well, they just added to today, they want to stick the ACA basic, what's the word I'm looking for?
Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, the Affordable Care Act. They want to do the repeal.
The mandate.
Repeal. Yeah, they want to take the mandate right. out and stick attach, it in with the tax
that, yeah, you know, this is politics at its worst, in my opinion. And it's kind of sad. But then some parts of the tax code look to be good, some look to be bad. But, you know, here's the biggest problem we've got. And, Alan, I don't think we'd have any disagreement on this. We've got this $17 or $18 trillion deficit.
$20 trillion, Joe.
Trillion.
It's up to 20 now.
Alan, have you heard my million, billion, trillion story?
No, I haven't.
Oh, is there one person alive that hasn't heard this story?
I have not heard that story.
Okay.
Well, you know, you know how most of us, when somebody says million, billion, trillion, or most of us kind of ignore that because our checkbook is missing those zeros?
Yes.
But this is perspective. It's trivia, but it's perspective. And that is this. A million seconds, tick, 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 is 12 days. A million seconds is 12 days. That means if you stood in front of the fireplace and you threw $1 a second into the fireplace, let's assume it's burning, it would take you 12 days to burn $1 million. You think that's something. A billion seconds is 32 years. A little different from 12 days to 32 years.
Right.
A trillion seconds is 32,000 years.
Couple more zeros, you're talking real money now.
Even for a CPA, that's real money. Now multiply that times 20. I don't know if there's a calculator in the world that goes that far out.
Oh, I'm sure you get some super calculator that can do a super computer.
You got one of those in your office?
No.
Oh. All I'm trying to say is that's our government problem and our national problem, and it doesn't seem that anybody cares to address
well,
that.
Well, you know what it is, Joe? Over the years, it's crept up. Only until I think when Obama came in, he doubled it.
Right.
And before that, though, it was incrementally, you know, a couple of trillion a year. And
a couple of trillion a year.
Nobody.
No big deal.
No big deal. Well, it was a big deal, but nobody pays attention because it didn't affect the population.
And it still
does. Nobody understands it or feels it. They just know this is what I have to pay in taxes, whether the debt is $20 trillion or $50
trillion. Or $50. Makes
it doesn't
no matter.
It makes no difference to them. Right. They work and they have to pay taxes.
Yeah.
And that's all they care about. What's my bottom line?
90% of the people, and at least that much, I mean, they're not living with 3 years' worth of money in the bank saved for futures. And if you're raising kids and stuff, you might be paycheck to paycheck. It's tough. So worrying about our government is certainly not on their list. And we're lucky enough, thank you, Lord, that we all get to live in America, which there's no doubt about it, in spite of our problems, is still the place to live on the entire globe.
But, you know, being an accountant, Joe, I have an appreciation for numbers. And if you look at the debt that has grown to $20 trillion, and you look at just the interest on the debt, you realize it's becoming a larger and larger percentage of our GDP. I mean, mathematically, at some point, you can't continue to do this.
Well, mathematically, where it's between 6 and 7% today is the interest debt, just on about, the debt.
And the debt.
Now, that's at a debt. Low interest rate.
Yeah, and think about the percentage of our GDP. I mean, in other words, I think, what's the number? We put out something like $19 trillion a year in GDP.
And 6% of that is interest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very sad. Anyway, so the whole concept of our group is simply to help educate you on what is going on out there. Any questions you might have, you know, Alan, it's an interesting thing. A lot of things that we take for granted, Vince, and you know this on a daily basis, people haven't ever heard. You don't know it if you haven't heard it, haven't learned it. It's just like I had a young lady come in to see me some time ago trying to get educated and from the show. And she said, "What's stock?" Well, isn't that something we take academically? We've heard that word for so long. And she wasn't talking about bullion, you know, or chicken stock.
She wasn't talking about the grocery store stock?
No. And that's, or the stocks you put people in when they're punishing them.
Right.
You know?
None of that.
Or the stock that's in the corral. I mean, there's lots of words. American English has got lots of definitions sometimes for one word. But stock just means ownership. All it amounts to is if you're a publicly traded company, this is the easiest one to describe, they may issue 1 million shares of stock in a company, let's say, for $10 a share. That means the company's worth $10 million. And if I own one share, I own a piece of that company. So the stock is strictly ownership in a company. Is that good or bad? Yes. It can be good, it can be bad. If the company is doing well, the stock can go up like crazy. People can cash it in or not cash it in, get dividends from it, because oftentimes companies will pay out a portion of their profits on a schedule out of that stock. So stock can be very good. But very often if a company gets in trouble, you can lose all your money. That's in stock. So it's kind of what they call a reasonably risky investment. One company, stock in one company can be a risk. Now, oftentimes we think certain companies, they're pretty solid, so you don't really worry about them, like utilities. Let's face it, if all of a sudden our Florida power was gone, we're probably trading each other's vegetables, and we better find some firewood because we got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, but most of the time we feel very comfortable with certain companies that we own stock in.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go from stock to a mutual fund means Alan and Vince and Joe pool together $100 million with investors, and we go out and buy stock in 100 companies, and we buy $1 million in each company, and we got this great big pie that's got 100 companies in it. And Pastor Tom comes along and says, hey, I want to buy $500 worth of that whole $100 million, and we stifle off a little tiny sliver. So he owns all 100 companies fractionally. That's how a mutual fund works. What's the purpose of that? Well, the purpose of that is to spread your risk out. So if one company gets in trouble, you got 99 that are not in trouble, you hope. So the object of the mutual fund is to diversify and give you more protection than owning just one company. Now, there's also exchange-traded funds, which are very similar. And I'm not going to go into a definition between the two. But what I'm trying to do is just explain what ownership is. And there's different ways to get ownership. And in fact, my favorite one, and I think we've talked about this, and Alan, I've kind of converted him a little bit.
He's already converted.
I know, but I've converted him again. Because he was pretty opinionated on what kind of investments are out there, and he's got his own portfolio.
But you edumacated me.
Edumacated.
That's right. That's the way to go.
Yeah, in the South, we add a letter or two. That helps. That a fund that is insured, insurance companies sometimes get involved, and my compliance people say you should know which insurance company is their claims paying ability. So I normally only deal with highly, highly, highly rated companies, A-plus companies. And they oftentimes they put insurance on this investment to protect people. In fact, right now, what's the S&P 500 up for the last 12 months or so?
It's up about 18%. It's giving a little back in the last few weeks.
1% they say it's given back in the last week. Prior to that, it was cranking right along. But quite honestly, you can't always go up. You got to have some bumps in the road.
Waiting for the air to come out of the market.
Yep.
Going to get a little bit of relief.
Well,
we're
most
up at 23,000 on the Dow.
Yeah.
We're going to wait and see what happens with that.
A lot of people think it's set up for a real correction, but if the economy keeps going up, if GDP keeps growing, if we have a 3% or better growth annually, you're going to see the market continue to go. Maybe not quite at the heated rate that it has, but still, none of us can absolutely predict the future. We have all seen things go up and then all of a sudden come down like a rock because outside circumstances, could be a war, who knows what, can create all kinds of problems. So very often people want to buy stock, but they're scared. If they buy a mutual fund, okay, now they know they're going to spread their risk out among 100 companies, but if they can put insurance on that 100 companies, I've got clients right now literally that are up over 20% for the last 12 months, and they're happy as a clam. Now, is that the right thing to do? Not necessarily. Because
take profits.
Well, you also have to know individual what your goal is. You know, what are you looking to accomplish? Like Vince and I talk about this regularly, and Alan, you and I do, that somebody, let's say in their 70s or 80s, they're saying, hey, how much time do I have left? I'm not looking for monster growth. I'm looking for security. I need to know that that money's going to be there to take care of me in case I don't die. If I knew when I was going to die, that could solve a whole bunch of problems.
Except for that model is changing, Joe.
Well, the problem with the model, as Vince was leading into, is that people are living longer and longer. The old rule used to be, let's put 50-50 into stocks and 50% into bonds. And now all of a sudden, the bond market's starting to go south. And that used to be a secure place, or thought it was secure, and it can be a problem. So literally, what people need to know is not necessarily what to do. They need to know who to talk to, mm-hmm. to get the right type of advice. And the right type of advisor is going to say, what's your goal? How much time do you have? What do you want to accomplish?
When you say that word, Joe, I think of that commercial. Bonjour. Your advisor.
That's kind of, you know the commercial, right?
Yes.
I think everybody knows that. The French model.
The French model.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Ken, you mentioned the word model. Well, I have been watching with some amazement a little change in the economics in the retail industry. You know, years back, well, let's take a call here because we
can't let them wait. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hello, Joe. Hello, Vince.
Hello there.
And Alan, too.
Hello, Alan.
There you go. I thought
sorry about that.
He's kind of short down here at the end, but, you know, we don't try to hide him on purpose.
I had a question regarding required, distributions from a retirement plan and whether the 20% is required on a hardship distribution from a retirement plan. We're dealing with the IRS in a situation where the taxpayer or a family member initially did not report their distribution from their retirement plan, hardship distribution. They didn't receive the information, and then they were assessed the accuracy-related penalty. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to confirm if we could say, hey, well, the plan sponsor, they neglected to withhold the 20%, but I'm hearing mixed messages that the 20% may not be required if it's with a hardship, if it deals with a hardship. So trying to get some clarification on that.
Well, normally it's by exception that they don't withhold. In other words, you have to apply with a reason why you should withhold to the brokerage. Otherwise, they're required to withhold if you don't give them reason not to.
Vince, let me ask you this, and asking for him. Usually when people want to take money out of a retirement account, they want, obviously, the people that are holding the money want you to withhold tax because it's mm-hmm. it's a taxable consequence, and so does the IRS. But isn't there almost always a box that's checked, do not withhold tax?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's where you have to make a request. You can't, if you say nothing to them, then they're going to take out
they're
the statutory minimum, and that's it.
Now, there's not a hardship clause that I know of. Is there such a thing?
I don't think so. Usually it has to do with you don't anticipate having any taxable income, or you're not expecting to pay any taxes for the year, and you state that to them and you sign off on it. There's a form for it. Then that lets them off the hook to withhold from you.
So literally, where you're going with this is you don't have to withhold tax on that. It's an election that you make when you take the money out. And if you don't make the election, the whoever's holding the money will automatically hold the tax. But there's not a penalty if you didn't withhold the tax. That doesn't mean you won't owe it. And that doesn't mean if you didn't file it, you will have a penalty plus tax plus interest. But if your annual income was, let's say, none because you're not working and all you're getting is Social Security or that required distribution or any distribution, you may not owe any tax. So there's no reason to withhold it.
Yeah, but you need to file something with them that would allow them to do it. Otherwise, they could be in violation of the withholding rules, and then they get slapped.
So they don't
want to do it. They'd rather take it from you and let you deal with it on your level.
I think probably what happened is when whoever the relative was took the money, the people that were sending the money to them didn't give them the option to not withhold. They just automatically withheld it, which I've seen happen before. And that's it. So
So the other thing is, you, just because you you didn't withhold, is there's another angle to this, and that is on the estimated taxes that you should have paid and when you should have paid it. So in terms of the penalties, you know, you can annualize that income too when you file the return. In other words, if you got the income in November or December, they're not going to penalize you for not having paid in the tax in the first, second, and third quarters. You follow me on that?
Okay. Here's the next question. Okay. Is this person retired? Are they low income?
No. It actually was a pretty significant withdrawal. They weren't. They didn't know the value of the account, and they just said, "Hey, give me like 10% or whatever."
Oh, okay.
And it
okay.
ended up being like $165,000 distribution.
Wow.
And so they got hit with a huge accuracy-related penalty. So we know that the distribution is taxable. It's just we were trying to see if we could get rid of the accuracy-related penalty. So if I understand you guys correctly, if this relative says, hey, don't withhold anything, the plan sponsors, they're allowed to still say, well, you elected not to have any taxes withheld, so we're not going to withhold anything.
Exactly. And then if you don't file it, or you get too much and you don't report it, there's going to be tax penalty plus interest.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. You'd be careful with that. And the accuracy-related penalty is very severe.
Yeah.
As you know, you found
out the hard way, or they did, so you're trying to help. But
it's like given the amount, they're trying to say 40%, and we're like, whoa.
I know. So, one of the things you...
Pretty significant.
Let me give you a suggestion that may not work. And that is, you call up, make an appointment with the Internal Revenue, go down and meet them, and plead a bit of ignorance, because it's the truth, and just explain that you never meant to do this. Please help me. And very often they will work with you, and there are certain pieces of the code that allow them to forgive or suspend or do certain things to help. But the new IRS, quite honestly, in my experience, has been extremely cooperative with people and help. They're not nasty whatsoever, and they will be very, very understanding. And if when you go down to the IRS, if you don't like the person you're talking to, just say, I want somebody different.
Okay.
You know, you have certain rights as an American. But honestly, I think the Internal Revenue might be cooperative in order to help, because it was an innocent mistake.
Okay. And just one last follow-up question. So I guess if I tell them to, if I tell my family member to reach out to the plan sponsor, and there's no evidence that they said not to withhold, I guess would that bode well for them? Or should we get some sort of documentation to say, hey, look, they were supposed to, they just didn't?
If you can get that, I would say.
Yeah, I would go to them and get the facts. So get the facts first. Is there anything on file? And if there was... And go to the family member first and ask them, were they ever contacted
by
the
broker?
Did they sign anything before they took the money out?
That's
the first place to go. And get the facts straight, and then go, then you can talk to them as to why they didn't withhold, if they should have withheld. It's a whole different thing there. But if you could prove that, that would be good in your case. Like Joe suggests, you go to the IRS, you talk to them, say, look, we spoke to them. They were supposed to withhold. They didn't. There's no proof that they were exonerated from that.
Yeah, there's nothing signed.
There's nothing signed. So, you know, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to think here?
Yeah.
So they might give you some leniency with that, particularly on the accuracy-related penalty.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, you're going to pay the income tax on it. Obviously, if there's any estimated tax penalties, you might have that as well. But the accuracy is a big one.
So. My thing is, you got nothing to lose at this point, everything to gain. It's not going to get any worse than it is for you right now.
Sure. No, and you should, or at the very least, call them. But meeting with them would be better.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You take care. Thanks for the call, caller.
You know, that's the first one we've had with that type of thing. But I mean, almost my experience, and I'm sure yours too, Vince, if somebody wants to get a withdrawal from an IRA, they've got to sign something. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is every other, I can call in on a regular brokerage account, say, send them $5,000. That's all they need. But on an IRA, I've got to have a signed document.
And by default, you would think that they'd have to take something out, because most of them take out a minimum 10%.
Yeah.
But minimum.
If you don't and they says right on the form, hold no taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And you mark it and check it.
That's like when you give your employer a W-4. Yeah. And
same
you
thing.
Say, I'm exempt because I have 10 exemptions.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I'm not going to be subject to
and
taxes.
And you've got
to
sign that.
And you sign it and you hand it, and that gets the employer off the hook.
Exactly.
And taking out money.
My guess is, and I'm just guessing because I've not seen it, and I'm not saying mistakes are not made by people and companies. I mean, I've seen some humdingers recently. In fact, speaking of which, one of my humdingers got a client that had two accounts. Substantial accounts. One was an IRA, one is a non-qualified account. So they're transferring both accounts from company A to company B. Company A says, okay, one is an IRA that is a inherited IRA, and the other one is also an IRA instead of a non-qualified.
Okay.
And they wasn't, and it is not. Now, to undo this mistake, somebody just... one person and was sitting with company A made a mistake. But you know, when you, after that mistake is made and goes to company B, to get company B to reverse that mistake, it's not that easy.
It's not easy at all.
So I'm waiting, and I asked them for documentation on the thing, and it's a 32-page document. So what did they send? They sent me one page of the 32. I said, that isn't going to fly, because no place on that page does it say that it is either an IRA or not an IRA. Anyway, mistakes can happen is my point.
You had a question, or
well,
you were talking about something else.
I was mentioning I find a very interesting thing happening in the retail industry. You know, a number of years back, companies would advertise that if you go on our website, you're going to get the best prices for
right.
things that you order. Well, as we all know, the retail industry has had a lot of problems over the last couple of years. We don't have to name the stores that
right.
that have either failed or are about to fail. But I find it very interesting that Walmart is now advertising that if you come into the store, you're going to have better prices than on the internet on certain items. And if that works... If Walmart, in fact, increases their traffic, and that's what they're trying
that's
to do
doing,
in the stores, that could save the brick-and-mortar retailers. Because if they...
If it works.
So
if it works.
It's a pendulum switch from getting people to do all their shopping on the internet
right.
to the retailers like Walmart saying, wait a minute, come on into the store.
You know,
we got a deal for you.
That's very interesting, because Walmart recently announced that they were coming out with an online grocery shopping with home delivery.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that kind of goes counter what they're doing.
But
with
they're trying to do both.
Wait a minute, Vince. You know, food is something you need year-round. What... Probably they're
talking about something else other than food. Okay.
They're talking about things that people are going to buy for Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, you know, those types of items.
Just thinking about the model, though, the online model versus the store model. Yeah, I guess so. I guess you're right.
Interesting. I was listening to somebody on the tube the other day or on CNBC, and they said, you know, they think there's like a new concept here, getting online. You remember the old Sears catalog?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody at home had a great big Sears catalog, and we ordered stuff from the Sears catalog, and they delivered
thing.
It right to your house.
Online's the same as a
kind
catalog.
Of, kind of familiar, isn't it?
But you're on a computer, as opposed
now
to turning pages.
Instead of turning pages and picking up the phone and calling and ordering it. In fact, they remember back then, you could actually get a whole house delivered through Sears.
Right.
You had to assemble it yourself or hire an assembler.
That's right.
But Sears had it, Ward's had it. Pennies, there's tons of catalogs.
There's a real sad thing with that company.
Oh yeah,
Sears. I mean, they sold off the last asset that they have. Basically,
well,
they sold off the tools.
But you know what? Nothing stays the same in life, does it?
Well,
except
yeah,
death
but the
and
smart
taxes.
Ones adjust, modify, change.
Smart. Here you go.
You know,
magic word. You hit it. Management can fall apart. The world is a competitive place to the benefit of the consumer, and those that don't compete and don't hang up, they get run over.
Right.
And exactly. That's called the way life works.
Well, you know, there things change, but a lot of it is you know, management does not change with the times. I mean, It's incredible.
That's what Joe's saying, yeah.
It's incredible that this morning I read an article talking about GE, General Electric.
Yeah, boy.
The fact that General Electric was the first stock in the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the only stock in the Dow Jones Industrial Average that has remained. And what was the article today? That GE might be taken out of the Dow.
Monster company. You know, here comes management. And guess what? The guy that was running the show is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And now they got the new guy in. But you know, when you go downhill for a period of time, going back uphill takes a little bit longer, it seems, for them to recover.
Yeah, look, same thing happened with HP, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
And as far as education, that's exactly the point, that if you have a good financial manager that helps you to manage your family's finances, if you have a good accountant, if you have a good real estate person, you are farther ahead. It's very important to not only look at the numbers of a company, but to look at the people who actually are in charge and actually make the decisions.
But you also need some people that have vision, Alan. And that's what I mean about looking at strategically, thinking about where the company needs to go and where do you invest the money today to yield something tomorrow. And if you're not willing or able to make those changes, then you become a dinosaur and you're out. You're extinct.
Hey, how many retailers have we seen in our life that have come and gone? And big companies. Mm-hmm. And that happens. Nothing stays the same. How many automobile companies are gone? There was probably 40 or 50 of them in the 20s and 30s, maybe more.
What Vince said, I mean, you look at companies like Amazon, Facebook, Google, Tesla.
Yeah.
All those CEOs have visions for the future. You look at GE. Can you tell me what GE's vision for the future is?
Now it's called regroup.
Well, you know, if you take it to extreme, it's like somebody back in the 1890s who made all those buggy whips, you know, and they just kept making buggy whips, but they just shrunk it down so it met the demand for buggy whips. Eventually, there was no demand, and they went out of business.
You're out of business.
Well, the same thing here. You got to go into areas, new markets, maybe get online exposure or whatever. You got to change.
I've had people complain about the lack of jobs, and I'll say, well, you know, every time a new something comes along, it eliminates a bunch of jobs, but it opens some new ones. Like, if we go to Europe, they had barges floating up and down every river and canal and moving goods all over the place. And they needed horses to drag them. Well, then all of a sudden the railroad was invented. All of a sudden these horses are unemployed.
Mm-hmm. Right?
We didn't need all those horses.
The horseless carriage. Well, yeah.
Then the automobile came along, a whole nother group. And then trucks came along, and then interstate systems. Every time you invent something, it replaces something else, but it creates another paradigm. But anyway, we have lived a good while, our group sitting right here, and we've seen some monster changes. I mean, Vince, I mean, you were born before there was TV.
No.
No. Oh, okay. It was Alan. No. I know it was somebody here.
It was you.
It was me. Oh.
He reminds me of certain other people I know. For diversion, he'll accuse the other one. Keep everybody away from you.
I'm just trying to make sure you're awake.
I was awake. No, television was around when I was born, Joe.
But it was a great big box with a little tiny screen.
It was It was a big box.
That.
Yeah, it was
we had Madman months in Detroit.
Yeah, it was in the '50s.
1-888-221-8990 888-221-8990 Now, for those of you that don't want to talk to us on the radio, and I don't really blame you, not that I pick on people, I would never do such a thing. Occasionally, a rare occurrence.
Except me.
Well, on the other hand, I regularly pick on people. Anyway, you dial that number. If you don't want to talk to us on the radio, you call Pastor Tom or Dave or Karen during the week. They'll take your name and number, and we'll get back to you. If by chance anybody calls and we don't get back to you within 2 days, please call again and bug us because we're not perfect.
Yeah.
Last time I walked on water,
it was frozen.
So, I mean, we do make a mistake on occasion, and sometimes we might get 20, 30 phone calls in a week, and sometimes somebody falls through and somebody didn't follow up correctly, and that upsets me when we do that because we're here to help. We're here to answer questions. It's just like this fella here that called in with that tax situation.
Yeah, we had the one last week, which I did a little research on that one. Remember the one who's got his girlfriend living with him?
Pastor Tom is still talking about that.
He's still talking about that one.
I know.
But, I mean, there is an income as an income component to that. If you're a non-relative and you have to live in that household for the entire year,
And that's okay.
Yeah, and you can't make more than $4,400 or $4,300.
Well, under last week's circumstance, she was unemployed. She was strictly the housewife type thing. And
she was the queen, as she has
so
he said.
After he got caught, we're telling she became the queen immediately. But wasn't it you said they have to live in a house the whole year?
The whole year.
Now, if she gets mad at him for a week,
then that she doesn't qualify as a dependent.
Ooh, so he better be nice.
He better be very nice.
If he wasn't.
Or be a good liar.
Oh, boy.
And don't get caught.
Don't get caught. 1-888, but that's the law.
Right.
The law says if you're going to claim a dependent, they have to be a dependent.
Yeah, exactly.
And
they got to live with you all year.
That's it.
And you got to provide for them.
No different than a child or a mother-in-law or mother or whatever. If you're going to claim them, they have to be dependent on you.
But you see, certain relatives don't have to live with you, and you could still get the dependency.
Oh, yeah? Like if they're in college?
Oh, no. In-law, mother-in-law, father-in-law. They could be in a nursing home. You could be or in assisted living, and you're providing.
You're providing. Yeah.
They could be yours.
No, you mean if I have a honey and she's in a nursing home, I can't claim her?
If you have a honey in there, no.
No,
got to be a relative. No honeys.
No honey. I've got stories. I've got stories.
Uh-huh.
I've heard them all from clients of mine. You know, when they come up with a circumstance that you wouldn't think would be normal, but hey,
that guy was funny though last week.
Oh, he was. He was good. I hope his girlfriend's not listening because he'd be in trouble again.
I think you're never going to hear from him again.
I don't think so. 1-888-221-8990 221-8990.
It was funny though that he called up a Christian radio station with that.
You know, that he who is without sin cast the first stone.
Well, this is true. Well, we all could be not throwing any stones.
There's no stone. Luckily we can't even find a stone. Well, you know, being judgmental is against the rules.
No.
Now, I know the Bible says certain things are pretty clear, but hey, you know, my thing, and I'm not going to defend anybody, but it's between him and God. And if he's
that's a good attitude.
You know, that's when it all. I had a client years ago that he has since died, but he had every health problem in the world. Now I'm talking every health problem. He'd had 11 heart attacks, bypass surgery twice, brittle bone disease, crippling rheumatoid arthritis, epilepsy. Before he died, he got breast cancer, and they put a vent in his head.
Other than that, he was fine.
And he called me up one day and says, Joe, what do you think about suicide?
Oh,
and I said,
you're kidding me.
No. But first he started it off with the biggest catch-all there is. Quote, are you a friend of mine?
Oh, boy.
Now, you know you're in trouble. Usually you got to hold onto your wallet now. That's the first thing when somebody says that. And I said, of course I am, Bob. Now, he and I are boaters. We really were buds. We were friends. He was a client, but his family. So what do you think about suicide? And I said, Bob, I'm not going to talk to you about that. And he says, no, I understand, but I just want your opinion. And I said, Bob, no, I'm not going to talk to you. And he says, no, Joe, listen, tell me the truth what you think. I said, Bob, let me tell you this right now. If you kill yourself, I'm going to come and kill you. Now, the good news is, after all of that conversation, which went on for about 20 minutes, he did not commit suicide.
Thank the Lord for that.
And he did go through some terrible, terrible, terrible agony before he died. But Lord save me, he was just a magnificent person, and it just killed me to watch him go through that. That man was on the morphine drip, and you'll get a kick out of this one. He went out and bought a brand new. Now he had aeronautical patents. He did well. Worked for a big company, and they rewarded him pretty well for these patents. So he had a great pension. He was living well. So he went out and bought a brand new Corvette. So here he is on a morphine drip. And I mean, he controlled the flow of the morphine, how bad he was. I mean, it's pretty tough. I says, Bob, how can you drive that car? He said, you know, you shouldn't even have a driver's license, let alone. And he said, well, what I do, I turn the morphine drip off. Then I wait a half an hour to when the pain really kicks in. Then I jump in the car and I drive it for a half an hour until the pain gets so terrible I can't see. Then I come home and then I start the drip up again. So he said, I got a 1 hour window. I thought, only you, Bob. You make something that's terrible sound funny. You know, because, and that was how he was. In fact, I got to tell another story. I wish his wife was listening to him. But he had this big boat and he loved that boat. Loved that boat. And he used to take 20 and 30 people out cruising and just loved it. So he would get down in the engine room to work on it, and he couldn't get out. So he had to have people come and help him. Well, one day I talked to him, and he was all depressed. And I said, Bob, what's wrong? He says, I got to sell the boat. And I said, why? You love that boat. And he goes, yeah, but I've got to sell it. And I said, why? Evie said, next time I get down there, she's not going to help me get out. She's just going to leave me there. And he said, Joe, really, the truth is the boat's killing me. I can't handle it physically. And I said, man, Bob, I feel bad. And he goes, oh, I'm sick, but I'm going to do it. So he lists the boat and gets it up for sale. And a few weeks later, I call him on the phone, and he answered the phone. Hello. I said, Bob, how you doing? He says, doing great, Joe, doing great. And I said, what happened? He says, oh, I got this new medication plus this belt with vibrations and stuff for my back, and I'm feeling pretty good. And I says, well, what about the boat? You still going to sell the boat? He says, oh, yeah, I'm going to sell it, but I raised the price. One 888-221-8990. Now, I know you sent a couple of emails out in regarding to your client.
The tax law changes? Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
But from the last 2 weeks, other than the fact they're trying to attach the ACA to that.
That's all that's happened that I'm aware of, but there are other tweaks going on. For example, I think Orrin Hatch came out the other day and said they wanted to do something with the ability of corporations to deduct dividends, you know, as it is right now. And he's right about this. Corporations get to distribute their earnings, but the earnings are after taxes. So they pay taxes.
They pay tax, then
then they distribute that money. But then when you, as a shareholder,
you have
stockholder,
to pay it again.
You have to pay tax again on the same money.
Right.
And that's been around since.
Double taxation.
It's double taxation, and he's right. So he wants to put something into the bill that allows corporations to deduct dividends. So there would be symmetry between the dividend income and the dividend expense.
See, all these things make sense, but here's my biggest problem. We already talked about this. A $20 trillion deficit, and this tax bill, there's two sides to the story. We don't know what the truth is, because I don't know if there's anybody could ever figure this thing out, including the people that wrote it. They always simplify things by adding 20 or 30,000 pages. That is this is... Yes, it will stimulate the economy. Yes, we'll have full employment. Yes, we'll give higher wages, et cetera. All of that should happen with this, but will it be enough to actually address the deficit?
You see, I'm a demand side guy, Joe, because I say, so the corporation pays less in taxes.
Right.
So what are they going to do with the money? You're not going to see a reduction in the price of the goods and services that they offer, right?
Unless there's extreme competition.
Maybe. Only but it had nothing to do with the taxes.
No, nothing.
So, but the tax savings, where are they going to go?
Right.
You say, well, they're going to put it invested in, you know,
more
factories
machinery,
or more this or more that and expansion. Only but if you don't have demand for your product and service,
they're not
going
to do
what
that.
Are they going to do?
They're not going to.
No, they're not going to do that.
No, they had, I think one of the guys was on CNBC, and they had this big meeting about what are they going to do with the money. Hold your hand up if you're going to do this. Well, out of 30 people, two hands went up. Well, they had demand for their product, like you said. So they want to expand so they can handle the demand.
Right.
But right now they're holding off until if there's a tax thing so they can actually get the benefit from it.
Right.
But what you said was just pure logic. If I'm making widgets and I've got a market for 10 widgets and I make 10, I have a break even. If I have a market for 15, usually I go hire more people so I can make 5 more widgets so I can sell them. Real simple logic.
Simple logic, right.
So,
but how's the tax set if the tax savings
has nothing to do with that? Nothing.
And they say, well, it would really cause companies to borrow less.
Well, maybe yes.
Maybe.
But if they don't borrow, here comes a bank that also has to make money by borrowing and all the employees they have. I mean, it's a cause and effect type of situation. What I was looking for and hoping, which is maybe pipe dream, is that they would pay more money in dividends to the stock owners, to the company. Now, that is possible,
mm-hmm.
possible, because a public corporation has to answer to its owners, which is every stock owner, and they have elections and votes and all kinds of stuff. Now, there are the power players that really control the votes, but the reality is this. A company has to compete. In an open market, they have to compete, and if there's demand for the product, they're going to expand the manufacturing or whatever facility.
Exactly.
If there's
so
no
what comes first? If you give the money to the people,
right,
they'll have the money to spend, which will create the demand, which will then require them to expand. And that's how the economy is going to grow.
It always has.
You know, so I don't understand how that, because the biggest part of this bill, Joe, is corporate corporate taxes,
right?
Most of it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the rest of this stuff, it's take with one hand and take it away with the other. I mean, they're going to eliminate exemptions, for example. You won't be able to take exemptions. Right now, it's about $4,000, roughly, $4,100 per person. So a family, your husband and wife, it's, you know, $8,200. Well, under the law, both houses, they'll raise the standard deduction,
right?
Double it,
right?
To $24,000.
Right.
So you get $12,000. Great. Take away the exemptions. $8,200 comes off. So they give you take back 82. All right, so you got whatever, $3,800. So that's not, I mean, I'm not saying that that's minimal,
but
it's not when you add the tax on the $3,800, because that's what we're talking about. The tax, let's say you're in a 20% bracket. The tax on the $3,800 is what?
$760.
All right, that's not, I mean, it's not minor stuff.
No.
But it's not this huge thing.
The key is, and I guess we're all going to find out sooner or later, either it'll pass or it won't pass. You know, that's just how the system works. It's all politics as of now. And there's always going to be two sides. What's the old story? There's three sides. Your side, my side, and the truth. And invariably, if you can get an objective person that doesn't have an agenda, which, boy, that's hard to find. Somebody that you know doesn't have an agenda, isn't being paid by somebody to tell a story. An honest politician.
Yeah, well, it's an oxymoron.
Oxymoron, you know. I mean, I think perfectly good people can go into politics and they get corrupted because of the system. Because they got to play.
Once they walk in the door, they get corrupted.
They got to play the game.
They have to play it because otherwise, it's a meaningless exercise.
Yeah.
How would you like to be in the Congress and not be on a committee?
Yeah.
That actually does something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't invite you because you're the new kid on the block, and maybe you don't.
No.
Their politics doesn't agree with yours.
The game is played, and hey, listen, I guess we're just lucky the three of us are not politicians here. Life is hard enough just being a CPA, a financial advisor, and a used-to-be attorney.
You know,
I'm sorry.
Earlier we were talking about the deficit. Well, one of the other things I've noticed is the bond market is not doing very well at all recently in the last month or so. Interest rates have gone up, and that is usually an under-the-surface warning that there is
something
good going on.
I agree with them.
And you know,
it's a harbinger.
What they're talking about, and they said it in the last couple of days, inflation is starting to rear its ugly head again. Now, that usually becomes one of the harbingers when the bond market collects it, because all of a sudden, if interest rates are going up for bonds, people that have existing bonds are in trouble.
Right.
And I've been telling people now for 2 years, bonds are, don't get out of them. I mean, I'd rather see people sitting cash and not have any exposure than to be in bonds. But I got to take this call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, caller.
My name is Raymond. I just want to understand I can get some good information from you in regards to reverse mortgage.
Okay. Do you understand how they work?
Well, that's what I'd like to get from you, the understanding of how it works.
Let me give you a quick scenario, and what I'm going to do is have Mike Paulus give you a call tomorrow. He's our mortgage person. First of all, understand it's a federal program. This was instituted way back when Ronald Reagan was president, and the very concept is simply this. If you're over age 62, that's number one, and you have equity in your home, meaning you own your house and you owe less... Yeah.
Than
it's worth, you then may qualify for this. And the way it works simply is this. Let's say you have a $50,000 mortgage and your house is worth $200,000. They will loan you $50,000, maybe $70,000, maybe $80,000. You pay off your mortgage and you never have to make a payment. Now, there is there is interest and it accrues. That means it will grow. And one of these days, either you sell your house or you die or you move out of it, at that time, they will call the mortgage and say it has to be paid off. Now, if you owe more when you die, move, or do whatever on the house, there is no liability to you or anybody to pay it off. If the house is worth more than the mortgage, you can sell it, your family can sell it, anybody can sell it, and they get the profit. Now, that's the quick, easy scenario of a reverse mortgage. Does that make any sense?
I need to, you know, you are explaining it here to me, but I still need a deeper understanding of the pros and cons. you know.
Well, I think Mike would be a good, have Mike speak to him.
Mike Collison, he's going to call you tomorrow and give you the pros and cons. Now, because it's a federal program, the rules are the same no matter who you go through. What you're going to find with Mike is that he's local, and he'll spend the time to educate you to make sure you understand it.
And
the pros and cons. And let me give you the pros. The pros to me, I'll give you an example. I had a lady up in Fort Pierce a few years ago, 80 years old.
Yeah.
Never had air conditioning. She got a reverse mortgage. She now has central air in her house for the first time in her 80 years. She now has central air. Can you imagine living in Florida with no AC? Yes. This is not a pretty picture in the summer. Well, she never has to make a payment. One of these days she'll die and leave the house to her kids or whoever she leaves it to. They can sell the house, pay off the mortgage, and whatever cash is left is theirs. So it can be good. The cons, very often, like any mortgage, you have to pay fees to get it. And because it's a government-insured mortgage, some of the fees are not low. But understand, they're understandable once you look at the numbers. If it works, I think it's one of the greatest things since chocolate milk. If it doesn't work, then you'll know that real quick when you put pencil to paper and somebody like Mike will walk you through it and make sure you understand exactly how it works.
Yeah. All right, so I'll wait for his call.
All right, you left your name and number with Pastor Tom, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good. Mike will call you tomorrow. You have a wonderful day, and thank you for calling.
And the same to you, and thanks for your info.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling, caller.
Yeah, it's not every day we get a call on a reverse mortgage. I think they're great, but obviously nothing's for everybody.
I agree, and it's not cheap, Joe.
No,
you don't make a payment. That's true, but the charges, as you point out, it accrues. It grows.
Yeah.
So that at the end, but the theory is that, as Mike explained many times, the theory is that the house is going to go up.
Sure.
Far greater than the cumulative cost.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's say your house is worth $200 and you get $100 and you pay 5% on $100. That's $5,000 a year. But if the house goes up 5%, that's
$10,000. That's right.
Yeah. Exactly. So you. But literally, the whole concept is that it allows a person that's retired, usually retired, to spend some of that money and not have to pay it back while they're alive. So it can make a new lease on life.
Could be a lifesaver for people.
It has been. And I've seen some wonderful things that come out of it. 1-888-221-8990. Do we have a producer, a moderator, to tell us how much time we have left?
I don't know.
I mean, is he sleeping?
We're going to fire this producer.
Is he sleeping out there?
He's not producing?
Uh-oh. Guess what? Now he's got to work again.
You got 2 minutes.
Let's take this call and do it real quick. We can't do that one. You have to answer it.
Got to answer it first.
Well, are you going to answer that phone? Gee, what is that? It's hard training Pastor Tom, I'm telling you. We got very little time left. We may not be able to get into this call. We'll find out in 1 minute. More or less.
Let me transfer you on the air. Hold on a second.
Okay. Here it comes.
Here we go.
Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio. We got about 1 minute.
Okay, sir. I'll make it real quick. Question. About what age should a married couple, after they retired from their full-time job, to start planning a will and estate, trust funds and things of that nature for their children and grandchildren.
Let me give you a quick answer. This should be done way before you retire because it doesn't cost that much to do a will and say, what happens if I drop dead today? And what you have to do is, and you can change that will anytime you want before you die. So literally, the answer is sooner than later. I think we're out of time, and you call back next week, and we'll talk about it in detail.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program.
1-888-221-8990. Do we have to leave, Tom?
The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.1.